Hi, I'm Koshin Chris Kane, abbot of the Puget Sound Zen Center on Vashon Island, Washington. We're glad to be able to bring you these podcasts. If you'd like to learn more about our Zen Center, please visit our website at pscc.org. So I'd like to welcome again Christian, who is not only coming, you know, he's kind of representing the Rinzai Zen Center Sangha over here, and he's the president of the board over there, young president of the board, you know. I like to say he came up quickly, but he's been practicing for a long time there, actually, and we thought we'd, oh, yeah. I should say, I have a shadowy night job, which is going over to Norway. I spend a month there a year, serving and leading the Zen Center over there. I've been doing that for a while, and it's really nice for me to get those two together a little. And I thought it'd be nice to share something about my other life. And the Zen Center in Norway. So Christian's going to take it over at first, tell you a little bit about Zen in Norway and Buddhism in Norway, and then a little bit about the Rinzai Zen Center. We don't have as much time as we normally do today because the kids are going to be coming back in. And then I'll say a few things too.
Mm-hmm. Welcome. Thank you very much.
Yeah.
Thank you again for hosting me this week. And it's been a pleasure meeting so many of you during this week. I'm at the board and also most of the committee heads so far. So I have a few meetings left. It's been very interesting to see how this community works compared to how we are structured in Oslo. So I'll just start talking a little bit about Buddhism in Norway in general. There are about 40,000 Buddhists in Norway, most of which are native Buddhists, ethnic Buddhists. That is to say, they're either Vietnamese or Thai people, immigrants, or children of immigrants. So there's about 20,000 Vietnamese Buddhists, about 17,000 Thai Buddhists, and following Chinese Buddhists and some from Burma. So they comprise, is that the word?
Yeah.
The bigger part of the Buddhists in the world. And then there are some Buddhists who are seeking Buddhism out of their own, or wanting a sort of spiritual growth. And that's the minor part, but it's also, in a way, the most active Buddhists, in a way. And all of these Buddhists are united in something that we call the Buddhist Union. And the Buddhist Union, their main mission is to promote Buddhism in Norway, and they do that in several ways, but also sort of to keep track of all these smaller Buddhist organizations and groupings, and also work with the communications between these organizations. And the Buddhist Union, or it's sort of an umbrella organization, right? And so the Buddhist Union was founded as early as 1979, actually by an organization called Zenskolen, or Zen School, which was founded even earlier, in 1972, by a small group of people who wanted to learn more about Zen. And they gathered in the early days just to read about Zen. And then they started to meet more often, and they sat together, and they were quite active, according to the sources I read. they have the weekend sessions. So they called it just hyttetur, which is like a, it's a Norwegian word. It's more like a cabin trip. once every month. So they have a weekend session once every month. And then in 1979, they decided to found this Buddhist union, and they also got together with the Tibetan group in Norway, which is the biggest when it comes to like non-ethnic Buddhist organizations. And Rinzai Zen Center, Oslo, where I come from, has also its roots in this Zen school, which soon changed its name to Oslo Sasenkai. And then there was a split in the mid-80s. Sasaki Roshi came to Norway to lead a session. And or two sessions, I think, in 84 and 86. And when one of the members of this Oslo Sasakai got to know a bit more about Sasaki Roshi, he decided to leave the group, and he was also very influenced by Thich Nhat Hanh. So it was sort of a split where you had this new type of umbrella organization called the Drifting Cloud Sangha. This is, and that's also called now the Dharma Group, influenced by the teachings of Thich Nhat Hanh. And but Zen schooling continued, and split later on. A lot of fallouts and disputes. I'm sure you know all the drill. That's how it is. Into again Zen, the Zen school or Zen schooling. They took their old name. Right, it was Zen Skolen, Oslo Sasenkai, and then they returned to Zen Skolen, and Rinzai Zen Center Oslo, and Zen Fredrikstad. And Fredrikstad is just a small city. So that was just one of the members who moved to Fredrikstad, and they decided to create a small group there. But that's also, both Zen Skolen and Zen Fredrikstad, they are very small now, and not very active. So from the original Zen Skolen, it's mainly this Dharma group in the Thich Nhat Hanh tradition, and Rinzai Zen Center Oslo in the Rinzai, or in this tradition, which are the main active ones in the Zen school. There's also a Soto Zen group in another town, which is quite strong, with led by a man who studied for many years in Japan, but I don't know so much about it, and I won't even try to go into it. But Sasaki Roshi's first ordained teacher was Genro, and he moved back to, and he came from Austria, and he moved back to Austria, and some of the members from our early group started to attend Sashin there every year, and soon asked Genro to be our group's teacher. And Koshin, maybe you want to talk a little bit about Genro, or you want to...
You just keep going for a bit, and then I'll get to. Then we'll move the mic over.
Oh, okay.
And I'll do Genro and me and my thoughts about the center, and then I'll move it back to you.
Okay. Genro, yeah. And he has a bit different form than you have here. And we'll probably get into some of the more some differences between our different forms. And Genro was the our center's teacher until he had to retire in 2004. And then we had a small 2 years period where we had a Danish Osho. He was very strict. I never met him, but he was apparently very strict. But he only came to the group when we had Sashi. very strict at Sesshin. And then in 2006, we asked Koshin. I was still not a member of this group. But in 2006, the group asked Koshin to come and host the Sesshin. And I think in 2009, we asked him to be our teacher. And he has been ever since.
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah. I'll just say a word or two about Genro and who was the original, one of the early teachers at Rinzai Zen Center, and also Li Dun's teacher, first teacher. He was, I think we have a picture of him here. We're going to show some pictures later. He had such an interesting life. I mean, he was born in Vienna, he was Viennese, but he was pressed into service in World War II, fought on the Eastern Front, was a POW for a bit, and then came out and moved to America. He was a graphic artist. He became a painter. He painted in Philadelphia, the upper classes there, portraits, and it was very good, apparently. And then found David Stendhal Rost. Does anybody know him? Yeah. And who was also from Vienna, by the way. And he was really influenced by him. And at the time, there was a lot of back and forth between Sasaki Roshi and the monks there. And so he found Sasaki Roshi, and then he practiced with him for a long time and came back to take care of his father in Vienna and just stayed. Started the Bodhidharma Zendo. And he was, you know, he was Viennese. He was formal, but also not stiff. He had this really good sense of humor and relaxed. That just reminds me actually of a joke I had not planned to say. But here's a joke. So the difference between Germans and Austrians. For a German, the situation is I gotta get this right. Is serious but not hopeless. Not hopeless. For an Austrian, the situation is hopeless but not serious. Thought about that a few times over the years. We had a lot of Germans and Austrians come. That was told to me by an Austrian. So Genro. And he also influenced me. When I was in Mount Baldy, you know, there was forms very strict there. But he was also, sat me down when I was jiu-jitsu and said, you know, when you make a correction, make a positive correction. Don't make a negative one. Don't say don't sleep. Say wake up. Give him somewhere to go. Don't move around. Say be still. It's a subtle difference, but it's a real one. It was interesting. Anyway, I was as Christian said, I came out of the group in full in 2009, and I've been going over there twice a year since then. Gordon Geist is the monk there, the lay monk. He's been running that group really by himself. I mean, roughly speaking, there is a board, but for so many years, 30 years maybe? I don't know, I didn't have a date for that, but a long, long time. Mm-hmm. He started with Suzuki Roshi and the Soto Zen in San Francisco. He lived like at the corner of Haight and Ashbury. Was that San Francisco? Haight and Ashbury? Yeah. And anyway, he's American. And he went over there and married a Norwegian. So they're just there. They have all these American people to deal with over there. And we're both married to Norwegians, you know, so we're at least that smart. But Cohen has he's been very steady. He's just kept things going. He's very devoted to Genro and that form, and it's really beautiful. Like he's really kept the form very, very much the same from Genro's form. Genro's form is different from the form that I learned at Mount Baldy. Mount Baldy, we were a little shabbier, to be honest, and less formal. strangely. It was pretty plain strict, but there's various things that they do at the Rinzai Zen Center that we never did. For instance, to recite the repentance vow that we do every January. They do that every service. They do the Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha refuge at every service. These are things that Genro added to the form that they kept that I really appreciate. Let's see. So, yeah, a couple of other little detail differences. You know, when they serve tea, they go down on two knees all the way to the floor to serve tea. They chant more than we do. I've cut back on the chanting from Mount Baldy days, and the chant book that we had for years. This is just an interim chant book. We're going to add more chants later to this, but we chanted all the way from the Lotus Sutra all the way through to the end. Long, lots of Sino-Japanese chanting, and they still do that at the Rinzai Zen Center. Not as much, but on Thursdays. They still do that when there's a quorum. And at the retreats, we do that as well. So it's a little tighter there in a way that I appreciate. It's always been a small group since I've gone over there, just a few people on Thursdays and Sundays. We expanded the schedule, actually, maybe 4 or 5 years ago to include more Saturdays and a couple of mornings as well. And still it was small. And then in the last year or two, 3 years, it's just blossomed over there. And honestly, Christian has some serious part to play in that because he's really been unafraid to get out there and call people if they haven't seen him in a while. These are things that didn't used to happen. So he's really made a positive change there, I think. And so for Sesshin last year, I think we were 17 or 18 for the 7 day. Used to be we were 13, 14. And this next one, Christian was working the phone this morning. He was talking to a guy. He's like, "Do I have time to call him?" And I think we're going to be 25, 26, 27 for that, 7 day session.
We're going to be 30.
Sorry. That's right. That's his goal. And he's going to make it. Yeah. So things are really moving there. And the community is also, Cohen is kind of pulling back, and they're moving forward with a more structured approach. And of course, they might take something from here. I've been sharing my experience here about the work that we've done here with them. One other thing I thought I'd mention that I just love over there is they have a fest after their retreats, after their zazenkais or sesshins. They have a party, and that goes back to Genro days too. By the way, we didn't do that in El Baldy. Yeah, it's so boring there, but. But they have a party, and it's just such a nice party. It's such a nice feeling. It's dinner, They lay out a nice dinner with plates, just the bowls, and glassware and a little wine or beer. And everybody just really has a nice time together. That's something I've tried a little bit here. Hasn't taken on yet. But also I wanted to say that the last couple of years also, my friend Shingen from Berlin, I've gone to visit him, and he has come to help with the group, help teach there. Mm-hmm. And he goes at least twice a year now over there. And that's been a big help, I think, to the group. I want to say a little more before we take questions.
Maybe we can send around the pictures as well. There's some pictures of Genro there, actually.
Yeah.
But there's a picture of one of our retreat centers, which we borrowed from the
That's the retreat center
from the Tibetan group.
that the summer one?
That's the summer one, yeah. But the last 2 years...
It's out in the woods.
In the woods.
Yeah. But the last years we borrowed or we rented another place, which is very nice also. I mean, the Sendo in the Tibetan River is very nice. But everything else with this other place, it's a top, sort of a top of a... Not a huge mountain, but on top of a mountain. It's a sun observatory. So it's there's a lot of nice places to go for a hike. I don't know if you do that here, go for a hike during Sishin.
We used to, but we don't anymore. Mm-hmm. Now we do Qigong instead.
Right. So we do that every day. We have a hike.
This, by the way, is the last... this black and white one is going on. This is our last Zazen Kai in February, which was also almost 30 people, I think, wasn't it?
Mm.
The max. Mm.
I just want to talk a little bit about the religious structure in Norway, which might be interesting for you. As you might know, we have a lot of taxes in Norway. And 2% of our income goes actually to this big pot, which is distributed to different religious organizations in Norway. It's called like kirkeskatt or church taxes. At least that's the old word for it. And the Buddhist Union, this umbrella organization... Oh, sorry. This is the Tibetan... distributes all the money that comes into the for the Buddhist members to the different Buddhist organizations. So at Yunzai Zen Center, we say that there are two ways of becoming a member, and one way is to become a real member. We'll pay a pay a yearly fee. We don't have a monthly fee, but we have a yearly fee. Or you can sign up as or join the Buddhist Union with affiliation or affiliated to the Rinzai Zen Center, and then we get approximately 70 euros for each of those members yearly as well.
And all you have to do that is just check a box on your taxes, I think. Is that right? Or essentially sign something. There's no payment.
No, there's no payment, or it sort of goes from everyone's taxes. Everyone's taxes. So, and by default, if your mother or father is a member of the church, you're also by birth default member by the church.
They have a racket. That's a state church.
Yeah, I mean, so but this has the number of member of the church has declined radically the last couple of years, because the news are talking a lot about this, you know, bringing it up, and a lot of people are not aware that there are a member that they are a member of the church.
Lidun, for instance. You want to say
we were baptized, but we discovered when we were like in our 20s that we had been members of the church since we were born. And we, both my sister and I, walked down to the office and said, to get us out of this.
And so I too was a member of the church, and but I switched now, of course. And a lot of people do. I mean, they come to us for a short amount of time, and maybe we don't see them anymore. But even after they stop coming, they switch because they want their money to come to us and not the Norwegian church, for instance. And the funny thing is that I'll try to get this right, and I'll try to just simplify it. Let's say that there's only one member of any of these organizations, religious organizations, in Norway. But still, everyone who pays tax has to pay these 2%. So that one member is worth, you know, that whole pot. So let's say if that member is a member of Rinzai Zen Center Oslo, then we get a lot of money. So that pot is just so every member has sort of a price on their head. Is that
Yeah.
All right.
It's a kind of funny way to say okay. it. Yeah. Yeah, it's good. Yeah, exactly. Like, this, like okay. that. Yeah.
And the funny thing is that if someone goes out from the Norwegian church and don't join in another religious organization, by the way, the humanist organization, that's also a religious organization, like a, you know, it's defined by that.
It's the largest humanist organization in the world, actually.
Yeah. But if someone goes out of, let's say, the Norwegian church, but don't join in another religious organization, they contribute to that, all the other organizations get more money.
Because it's the same pie.
Yeah, the same pot, but the value of each member rises.
Right.
So, it's a funny system.
But it has helped bring me to Norway.
Yeah. And I think religion in Norway, it's sort of a bad word. What people associate with the religion. Much because of... the people feel so alienated from the church. And not necessarily their values. I mean, the Christian values are deeply rooted in Norwegian daily life, but we don't think of it as Christian anymore. I mean, we celebrate Christmas, but we don't think of that as that we are Christian when we're doing it, for instance. So everything has become very secular and very mundane. And in order to be religious, you have to believe in something that you can't prove or you can't see or for most people in Norway, that's a very strange thing. So being a Buddhist organization, a Zen Buddhist, it's hard to get people to be a part of or feel a part of a community, which I think religion is also very much about. Instead, it's much more individualistic. What's the word?
Helping yourself, maybe, in a way?
Right.
Like self-improvement?
To come there. And I used to say that like a icing on the cake. Like that's just the last piece of the puzzle. But it's very hard to get people to commit long term, I feel, and also to come. They don't come because they want to be a part of the community. They just want to come because they want to sit still for a couple of hours or to have this their spiritual growth, which is a challenge for us, I think. And working on I think we have a pretty strong sitting practice. Like the Buddha aspect, and largely thanks to Gordon, this fellow that Koshin was talking about. But we don't have a reciting teacher, so the Dharma part isn't that strong, and also the Sangha part isn't that strong. But I think, and I hope, and I believe that in organizing the center a bit differently, that we can lure people into or actually make people feel that they own the center more and thus creating a more community around the activities that we do. And I think you've done a really good job with that over here. And I think you can do that without making people feel that they're trapped into some religious organization, right? But just taking care of business and making sure that everyone, including themselves, gets more time and can devote more energy into the actual practice, just because things run more smoothly.
Yeah, thank you. I wonder, before we close, if there are questions that you may have of Christian.
I've got a question. It may sound a little loaded, but... and maybe it's for both of you. So, we have family practice here, And, you know, first, Koshin, I mean, how do you feel like that contributes to sort of a Sangha and a community? And do you have such a family practice? And is that something you talk about?
No, we don't have it. And but we have a long, more young people coming to our center. People who are searching for something, who've read about Zen, have a very intellectual approach to it, including myself when I first started to come there. So
more people in their 20s there. Mm-hmm. We don't have anybody in our 20s here. Mm-hmm. They have lots. It's a kick, you know. It's really a nice thing. Like people in their 20s and 30s, a lot of people like that. You know, it's harder for them. They're in life transition. When they have kids, they go. They usually toddle off somewhere. Or, you know, change. But it is important to me here. You know, part of it's because I have kids, and I really appreciate sort of bringing... I hope it helps both kids and parents, and also the whole Sangha, too, in a certain way, to integrate kind of everybody into the Sangha. And the classic thing is that, like, kids growing up with Buddhist parents, the parents just disappear somewhere and come back, you know, like to a retreat or whatever. This kind of gives them a sense of, even if it's just that, like a sense of what their parents are doing. And I hope that in the long run that will have some effect, some positive effect. It could have negative, you know. you know, we're Buddhists because we didn't like Sunday school. But hopefully it will be, you know, we can make it a positive experience for them too and give them something that they can take on later.
Yeah, and as I was saying about this icing on the cake, I think that this practice is the first things that goes for many people if something else comes up in their life, like a kid, you know. Because we have some people still associated with the center, but who has got kids, and now we don't see them anymore. And also part of this Norwegian mindset is that religion or anything loosely associated with religion is not something that you push on your kids. Mm. You know? Mm. So then you have to make a choice, you know, and the right choice, I would say, is to stay home with your family. I mean, or take care of your family. But of course, we should also, and we should discuss this, try to, you know, have a sort of a family gathering. You
know, I know Craig's tried it once or twice, and, you know, it's...
people are into it.
Yeah, and it's not easy. I mean, as Sam knows, you know, to kind of figure it all out. But we're kind of coming to an next level, too. Gene's on, and some other people are on a new committee, which is really kind of looking at how to do that right. Looking forward to that. Speaking of kids, they're going to stream in just a second. You got another question?
Christian, is there anything you've learned in the last week? I know you've been talking to some of the committee chairs that kind of interests you about maybe adapting something to Oslo?
I'm very keen on this idea about adapting some of the structure that we got here in our workflow. You know, our structure right now is that we have a board, which is sort of the mundane secular part of the center, and then we have something which we call a practice committee. And in order to be on the practice committee, you have to have done the precepts. And the practice Koshin is also on the practice committee, so that's sort of the religious part, and that's about it. And then we ask people to, hey, can you take care of this and can you take care of that, but it's not organized in that sense.
So this is an organizational sort of structure that you're trying to pick up from us,
right? Exactly.
The committees and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah. And of course, the crucial thing is to ask people not too late and not too soon, you know, to get involved in the center. But I think the next step for us is to just structure that structure before we get people to do stuff, you know, so that everything's laid out and, you know, the different tasks are ready. Of course, it won't be as we think it should be, but, you know, at least. I think that's the place to start, and that's what I learned here, that you get a lot of things done because so many people are involved.
Thank you, everybody.
This podcast has been brought to you by the Puget Sound Zen Center. Thanks so much for listening. To learn more about our community, you can visit our website at pszc.org.